Can we trust this man? Zion al-Din asked in his high feminine voice. Your Majesty, he is one of my best captains. I vouch for him with my own life, Muri Kadem ibn Abu Bakr replied. Zion had bestowed upon him the title of Muri, High Admiral, after the capture of Muscat. You might have to do just that, Zion stroked his beard as he studied the man they were discussing. He was prostrated before the throne, his forehead pressed to the stone floor. Zion made a gesture with his bony forefinger. Kadem translated it at once. Lift your head. Let the caliph see your face, he told his captain, and the man sat back on his heels. However, his eyes were downcast, for he dared not look directly into the eyes of Zion al-Din. Zion studied his face carefully. The man was young enough still to have the vigour and dash of a warrior, but old enough to have tempered it with experience and judgment. "What is your name?"
"I am Layla, Your Majesty."
"Very well, Layla," Zion nodded. "Let us hear your report."
"Speak," Kadem ordered.
"Majesty, on the orders of Muri Kadem 6 months ago, I sailed south along the Africa mainland until I reached the bay known by the Portuguese as the Nativity. I had been sent by the Muri to ascertain if, as our spies had told us, this was indeed the hiding place of Al-Salil, the traitor and enemy of the Caliph and the people of Oman. At all times I was at great pains to make certain that my dhow should not be seen from the shore. During the day I cruised well below the horizon. Only after nightfall did I approach the entrance to the bay. If it so please your Majesty." Layla prostrated himself again, his forehead pressed to the stone floor. The men seated on cushions facing the throne were all listening intently. Sir Guy Courtney sat closest to the Caliph. Despite the loss of his ship and the huge fortune in gold it contained, his power and influence were undiminished. He remained the chosen emissary of both the English East India Company and King George of England. Sir Guy had found a new interpreter to replace Verity, a writer of long employment in the Bombay headquarters of the company. He was a lanky, balding fellow, his skin pitted with smallpox scars, and his name was Peter Peters. Although his grasp of half a dozen languages was excellent, Sir Guy could not trust him as he had his daughter. Below Sir Guy sat Pasha Herminius Kutz. He also had been promoted after the capture of the city from Al-Salil. Kutz had accepted Islam, for he knew full well that without Allah and his prophet he could never be fully inducted into the Caliph's favour. He was now the supreme commander of the Caliph's army. All three men, Kadem, Kutz and Sir Guy, had pressing political and personal reasons to be present at this war council. Zain al-Din made an impatient gesture, and Muri Kadem stirred Captain Layla with his toe. "Continue, in the name of the Caliph." "May Allah always smile upon him and shower him with good fortune," Layla intoned, and sat up again. "During the night I went ashore and hid myself in a secret place on the bluff above the bay. I sent my ship away so that it should not be seen by the followers of Al-Salil. From this place I watched over the stronghold of the enemy, if it so please you, Your Majesty." "Continue." This time Kadem did not wait for the Caliph to give the word, and kicked Layla in the ribs. He gasped and went on hurriedly. "I beheld three ships at anchor in the bay. One of these was the tall ship that was captured from the English Effendi." Layla turned his head to indicate the consul, and Sir Guy frowned darkly to be reminded of his loss. "The other vessels were those in which Al-Salil fled after his defeat by the illustrious Caliph Zain al-Din, beloved of the Prophet." Layla prostrated himself again, and this time Kadem caught him a full swing of his nailed sandals. Layla bounced upright, and his voice was wheezy with the pain of his bruised ribcage. "Towards evening I saw a small fishing boat leave the bay and anchor on the reef outside the mouth. When darkness fell, the three men of the boat crew began fishing by lantern light. When I went back on board my dhow, I sent my men to capture them. They killed one man when he fought against capture, but they took the two others prisoner. I towed the fishing boat many leagues offshore before filling it with ballast stones and scuttling it. I did this so that Al-Salil would believe it had been overwhelmed by the sea during the night and the men drowned.
"Where are these prisoners?" Zion demanded. "Bring them before me."
Murikadem clapped his hands and the two men were led in by the guards. They were dressed only in filthy loincloths, and their emaciated bodies bore the marks of heavy beatings. One had lost an eye. The raw, black scab pit was uncovered except for the metallic blue flies that swarmed into it. Both shuffled along under the weight of the leg irons that were riveted to their ankles. The guards threw them full length on the flags at the foot of the throne. "Abase yourselves before the favourite of the Prophet, the ruler of Oman and all the islands of the Ocean of the Indies, Caliph Zayn al-Din." The prisoners writhed before him and whined their protestations of fealty and duty. "Majesty, these are the men I captured," Layla said. "Unfortunately, the one-eyed rogue lost his wits, but the other, who is named Omar, is made of stouter stuff, and he will be able to answer any questions you may deign to ask him." Layla unhooked from his belt a long hippopotamus hide whip and uncoiled it. As soon as he shook out the lash, the idiot prisoner began gibbering and drooling with terror. "I have learned that both these men were sailors aboard the ship commanded by Al-Salil. They have been in his service for many years and know much of that traitor's affairs."
"Where is Al-Salil?"
Zayn al-Din demanded. Layla cracked the whiplash, and the one-eyed idiot defecated down his own legs with terror. Zayn turned away his face with disgust and ordered the guards,
"Take him out and kill him."
They dragged him shrieking from the throne room, and Zayn turned all his attention on Omar and repeated the question. "Where is Al-Salil?"
"Majesty, when last I saw him, Al-Salil was at Nativity Bay, in the fort that they call Auspice. He had with him his son, his elder brother, and their women."
"What are they, his intentions? How long will he remain in this place?"
"Majesty, I am a humble seaman. Al-Salil did not discuss these matters with me."
"Were you with Al-Salil when the ship called Arcturus was captured? Did you see the gold chests that were part of her cargo?"
"Majesty, I was with Al-Salil when he lured the Arcturus onto the rocks called the Deceiver. I was one of those who lifted the gold chests out of the hold and carried them on board the Revenge."
"The Revenge?" Zayn demanded.
Omar explained hurriedly.
"That is the name of the flagship of Al-Salil."
"Where are those gold chests now?"
"Majesty, they were taken ashore as soon as the ships anchored in Nativity Bay. Once again, I helped to carry them. We placed them in a strong room under the foundations of the fort."
"How many men are with Al-Salil? How many of these are fighting men who are trained in the use of sword and musket? How many cannon does Al-Salil have? Are there only the three ships you have spoken of, or does the traitor have others?"
In his squeaky little voice, Zayn questioned Omar patiently, often repeating his questions. Whenever Omar faltered or hesitated, Layla sent the lash curling and snapping across his ribs. By the time Zayn sat back and nodded with satisfaction, blood was dripping from the freshly opened wounds that crisscrossed the seaman's back. Zayn turned his attention from the prisoner to the three men who sat on silk cushions below his throne. He studied their faces, and a knowing smile twitched at his lips. They were like a circle of hungry hyena watching a great black-maned lion feed, waiting to rush in and gobble the scraps after he had eaten his fill.
"It may be that I have neglected to ask this wretch questions, the answers to which are important to our deliberations."
He turned the statement into a question and looked at Sir Guy. Peters translated, and Sir Guy made a small bow before he replied, "Your Majesty's questions have shown his deep perception and understanding. There are a few small items of intelligence, personal matters, of which this loathsome creature might have knowledge. With your gracious permission," he bowed again. Zayn waved at him to continue. Peters turned to Omar and put the first question to him. It was a laborious business, but slowly Sir Guy drew from him every detail of the treasure and the strong room where it was stored. At last he was satisfied that all his lost gold was in Fort Auspice and that none had been hidden in some other secret location. His only remaining concern was how to regain possession of it without having to relinquish inordinate amounts to his allies, who sat with him before the throne of Zayn al-Din. He would find the solution to this problem later. For the moment he put it aside, and instead questioned Omar minutely on the identity of every Ferengi who was within the walls of Fort Auspice. Omar's pronunciation of the names was barely recognisable, but he understood enough to be certain that Tom and Sarah Courtney were with Dorian and Mansur. The years had done little to dim the bitter hatred he harboured for his twin brother. He remembered vividly the adolescent adoration he had felt towards Caroline, and his devastation when he spied upon Tom and Caroline's midnight coupling in the powder magazine of the old Seraph. Of course he had married Caroline in the end, but she came to him as Tom's reject, carrying Tom's bastard in her belly. He had tried to expunge his hatred of Tom with the subtle torments he had inflicted upon Caroline over the years of their marriage. Although time had taken the heat out of it, the hatred persisted, hard and cold as obsidian from an extinct volcano. Then his questions moved on to Mansur Courtney and Verity. Verity was the other great love of his life, but it was a dark, twisted love. He longed to possess her in every way, even those beyond law and nature. Her voice and beauty assuaged some deep hunger in his soul. However, he had never known such transports as when he sent the whip cracking over her sweet pale flesh and watched the crimson welts rise on her perfect skin. Then his love for her had been fierce and all-consuming. Mansur Courtney had stolen the paragon of his desire away from him. "What of the Ferengi woman who was captured by Al-Salil during the battle with my ship?" Sir Guy's voice trembled with the pain the question caused him. "Does the Effendi refer to his own daughter?" Omar asked with childlike naivety. Sir Guy could not bring himself to answer, but he nodded abruptly. "She has become the woman of Al-Salil's son, Mansur," Omar replied. "They share the same sleeping quarters and spend much time laughing and speaking privately together." He hesitated before he could bring himself to recount a matter so indelicate, but then he went on. He treats her as an equal, even though she is a woman. He allows her to walk ahead of him and to interrupt him when he is speaking, and he embraces and caresses her in the sight of others. Although he is of Islam, he behaves towards her like an infidel. Sir Guy's stomach churned with the acid of outrage and anger. He thought of Verity's body, so pale and perfect. His imagination ran out of his control. He was unable to close his mind to the vivid images that assailed him of the filthy and obscene acts Verity and Mansur performed together. He shuddered with disgust and with the perverse arousal that seized his loins in an agonizing vice. "When I capture her, I will flog her until the white skin hangs from her body in tatters," he promised himself. "And as for the swine who has perverted her, I shall make him scream for the mercy of death." His imaginings were so vivid that he was afraid the men around him must sense them as powerfully as he did. He could stomach no more. "I have finished with this piece of excrement, Your Majesty." He scrubbed his hands in the bowl of warm water scented with flower petals that stood beside him, as if cleansing himself from the repulsive contact. Zayn al-Din looked at Pasha Kutz. "Is there aught you wish to know from the prisoner?" "If your majesty graciously permits," he bowed. At first, the questions he had for Omar were those that would concern a soldier. He wanted to know how many sailors had been on board the three ships, and how many men were in the fort, how loyal they were, and how prepared to fight. He asked about the armaments, the placement of the cannon and the field guns that had been captured from the holds of the Arcturus. How much powder did Al-Salil have in his magazine? How many muskets? Then his questions changed. "The one that you call Klibi, the hawk, and whose Ferengi name is Tom, you say you know him?" "Yes, I know him well," Omar agreed. "He has a son?" "Him I also know. We call him Samoya, for he is like the storm wind," Omar told him. "Where is he?" Kurtz asked with a stony face, although behind the mask his anger burned brightly.
"I have heard it said within the fort that he has gone on a journey into the interior of the country."
"Has he gone to hunt ivory?"
Kurtz asked.
"They say that Samoya is a mighty hunter. He has a great store of ivory in the fort."
"Have you seen this store with your own eyes?"
"I have seen the 5 capacious storerooms of the fort packed to the rafters with its abundance."
Kurtz nodded with satisfaction.
"That is all I wish to know at present, but there will be many more questions later."
Cadam bowed to his uncle.
"Your Majesty, I request that this prisoner be given into my personal charge and custody."
"Take him away. Make sure he does not die, not yet at least. Not until he has served his purpose."
The guards hauled Omar to his feet and dragged him out through the great bronze doors. Zayn al-Din looked at Layla, who had crept away, trying to efface himself among the shadows at the rear of the throne room.
"You have done good work. Now go and prepare your ship for sea. I will need your services as a scout when you lead the fleet to this nativity bay."
Layla retreated backwards, bowing and making obeisance with each few steps towards the doors. When the guards and all lesser men had gone, a silence fell on the council. All 3 waited for Zayn's next pronouncement. He seemed sunk in a deep reverie, like that of the bang smoker, but at last he roused himself and looked to Kadem ibn Abu Bakr.
"You are bound by a blood oath to avenge the death of your father at the hands of Al-Salil?"
Kadem bowed deeply. "That oath is more dear to me than my life."
"Your soul has been desecrated by Al-Salil's brother, Tom Courtney. He wrapped you in the skin of a pig and threatened to bury you alive in the same grave as the obscene animal."
Kadem ground his teeth at the memory. He could not bring himself to admit how he had been defiled and humiliated, but he sank to his knees.
"I beg you, my caliph, and brother of my father, to allow me to seek satisfaction for these terrible wrongs that have been perpetrated against me by these 2 diabolical brothers."
Zayn nodded thoughtfully and turned to Sagai.
"Consul General, your daughter has been abducted by the son of Al-Salil. Your magnificent ship has been pirated and your great store of wealth stolen from you."
"All this is true, Majesty."
Zayn turned at last to Pasha Herminius Kurtz.
"You have suffered humiliation and your honour has been besmirched at the hands of this same family."
"I have suffered all these afflictions."
"As for me, the list of my own grievances against Al-Salil goes back to my childhood,"
Zayn al-Din said.
"It is too long and painful for me to recite here. We have a common purpose, and that is the eradication of this nest of venomous reptiles and pork-eaters. We know that they have accumulated a considerable store of gold and ivory. Let that be only the pepper sauce that piques our appetite for retribution."
He paused again and looked from one to the other of his generals.
"How long will you need to draw up a battle plan?" he asked them.
"Mighty Caliph, before whom all your enemies are turned into dust and ashes, Pasha Kurtz and I will not sleep or eat until we are able to lay the battle order before you for your approval,"
Kadem promised. Zayn smiled.
"I would have accepted nothing less from you. We will meet here again after tomorrow's evening prayers to hear your plan."
"We will be ready for you at that hour," Kadem assured him.
The war council continued by the light of 500 lamps, whose wicks floated in perfumed oils, to drive away the clouds of mosquitoes that, as soon as the sun touched the horizon, swarmed from the swamps and cesspools outside the city walls.